I guess I first went knocking on Mike and Sandra Teeter's door in the early 1990s. I thought hearing about his living in Germany doing church work would be interesting, and we had a lot in common as they were raising four boys and we three, all about the same ages and in school together. So our paths were crossing a lot. Mike and Sandra have always been warm, open friends with lots of interesting experiences. They enjoy talking about them. They have again been living overseas for quite a while. Back now, maybe for good, maybe for a spell. I was up for a little catching up time, so let's get to talking.
And how long is the interview?
Not sure.
Okay.
All right, Mike. You worked in American schools in what countries?
Well, we have over 37 schools around the world, and they're for international people. Schools where there are embassies, we have more Americans there, maybe 25-30%. And other places where they're just businesses, we'll have probably 5-10% Americans, and the rest are people from around the world. And we usually have around 25 to 30 different schools, not schools, but people from different nations.
Mm-hmm. How many different, what's the name of the organization?
It's called Quality Schools International. Okay. It was started back in 1972 in Yemen. And at that time, the American, the German government, and another government pitched money in to help start the school. And then after the wall went down back in 89, they established their first school in 1990, I think, in Albania. And since then, they've grown. They have shut some schools down. They had one school in Kabul, Afghanistan, but that one was shut down. So they've opened some and shut down some.
Are there other organizations that also have schools like this, or is this the International American School Group?
No. I remember probably back in the, two decades ago, if you looked online, there were hundreds, if not thousands, of, quote, international schools around the world. Now what happens, a lot of them are for profit, and a lot of them will be just somebody within that country, and it's more or less like a business, and sometimes you're not really educated. There's a lot of compromises that are reached, whereas the one that we work for, it is actually supported highly by the American government, so there's more of accountability.
Can you describe why the school exists, what the purpose of them is?
Well, for instance, in Yemen, they didn't have an international school, and a lot of times families go with their spouse. So in order to create schooling for them, they have to find somebody who will do it for them. Like, we have a small school that started in Djibouti, which is off the Horn of Africa, and that was due to some Americans for their embassy there, and then for some Asians for businesses as well. And it's a small school, so a lot of our schools are small schools, and it's just places where a lot of people will not go, and anymore it's becoming more and more competitive.
And this one is funded how much by the U.S. government, this organization?
It depends.
Okay.
And for instance, we'll have, there's certain security measures that we have to take, so the American government will give us so much money to bring the security measures in line with them. But it really depends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So the students coming to the school also put out money, the families put out money for their kids to get educated there?
Yeah. For instance, the American Embassy, they pay for all of their children to come to our school. Then you have other embassies that we service as well, and they pay for that as well. Then you have businesses, and the businesses usually pay for the people working for them. And then we have locals that many times we'll give a scholarship to. They have to pay a certain amount, and then the other we'll give a scholarship to equal out what they owe us. And then some are the wealthy of the nations. They pay for it themselves. So we do have a lot of wealthy people in the various nations that pay for it themselves.
Are there families, nationals in the countries you're at, that send their kids there because they want English immersion for their kids? Is that ever a purpose?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. And The academics and what we offer and with character, curriculum, etc. It's for the most part, for a lot of the countries we go to, they really are much better off coming to our
I see.
school. And yet you have to realize that we're only in Italy, in a European country in Italy, but that's actually for the United Nations who train their people to go into Africa. So you won't find us in Denmark or Germany, but we do have, oh no, actually we do have a school in Germany, but that's there for NATO. And we have one also for in Hungary, and that one is for NATO. But other than that, you're not going to find us in Western countries.
Do they ever build their own building, or do they always find facilities to teach in, or
Both.
both?
When I was in Vietnam, we had a school, and it was actually in an apartment complex. So we lived on the top floor, and the school took place on the rest of the floors.
Big variety in the number of staff, I suspect, at each school. The last school you were at was where, and how big a staff?
It was in Tbilisi, Georgia, and if you count maintenance, cooks, and everything, we probably had 50 some people, 50 to, 50 people, I'd say.
And that was K through 12, or what kind
No,
of a.
actually, it was from 2 year olds and up to seniors in high school.
And I think you said, but I'd like a repeat because I don't remember. How many countries are they in now?
Right now, we're in 37 countries.
Is there a difference in curriculum from country to country, or is it kind of a standard
No,
thing?
it is an established standard. We follow a philosophy by a guy whose name was Benjamin Bloom. It's called mastery learning. And so we have a curriculum, we write our own curriculum and teach people what's expected and the whole concept, the philosophy of mastery learning.
Can you describe that? How it would be different maybe from US curriculums, or would that be
Well,
hard to
it is an
do?
American-based curriculum.
Okay.
It's just the grading system is based on what they consider mastery learning, which anything from an 80% or less, you're not there yet. And so until you pass that class with an 80% or better, you have to keep taking the class. And you have after school, you'll help coach kids to figure out what's wrong with them.
Is there any interaction between staff and the national kids? I'm not sure I'm using the right phrase. They're in the native language of the country, or is just total English is the only thing you'll hear in the school
No, it'll
system?
vary from country to country. A lot of the schools that we have to come under the expectation of the government of that country. When I was in Kazakhstan, we had to teach so many classes to the locals in Kazakh in their actual language. And for history, we had to teach that as well. So it varies. Some schools, we don't have to teach anything within that, what's expected of them in their curriculum in their local country. But we do offer foreign language from 6 year olds and up. So a lot of the six and up to probably middle school kids, they take it 3 times a week, and then the rest will take them 5 times a week.
So the foreign language would be the language of that country being taught to English-speaking kids. Is that what you're
No,
saying?
to everybody. For instance,
Okay.
you're offered, say, the first grade class, they can take Spanish, French, German, or Chinese. And so we have a lot of schools in China, so a lot of them will take Chinese. And then a lot of the Chinese will take a language class in Chinese to better their grammar.
Who can teach with this organization? What are the qualifications, or what you're looking for?
Well, it's the same in the States. You have to be a certified teacher.
Okay. Are there are these schools a target? How big a deal is security for these schools? Maybe less so than here in the States. I don't know.
Well, we do have to come. We have to abide by the American State Department standards of secure schools. So, at our school, we have guards posted at the gates that you come in. We have a metal fence with bars, not like a prison, but it's nice landscape-wise around the school. You have to have certain glass on your doors. You have to have certain locks. So, whatever the State Department expects, and when they dictate to us, they will give us the money to bring it up to standard.
Did you carry a concealed weapon?
No.
Good, I'm glad to hear that. Do you have the same yearly schedule if you're in the Northern Hemisphere, like
August
through May or something?
Yeah, we have some schools in Central America. We have some in South America. We have some in Africa. We have some in Asia. We have some in Europe. And they're all, they'll miss maybe 1 week. They'll start later or they'll get out 1 week early. But other than that, they're on the same schedule.
Is teaching in these positions in these schools abroad a well-kept secret? Or does everybody that goes into education hear about it and it's kind of people know that it's an opportunity they could have?
There's a lot of people, they go to school and they want to become a teacher and go the international realm. So you could look online and put up international school in Tibet and it will show you how many international schools are there. They have fairs here in America, and some of them are costly, some of them are not so much. And then it'll be a school fair. They have one in Iowa, and it's in January, and then schools from all around the world come and put your name in, and you do interviews for 3 days or so, and you're hired before you leave.
Is there a tightness? Do they have any trouble filling positions, or is there more people applying than they need?
Well, it varies. Like during COVID time, we had some very hard issues getting people to stay or getting... China was very difficult for people. We had one regional director, because he travels around and visits other schools. He left the country in January. He was not allowed to get in for over a year later because everything was so tight. But it varies. COVID really put everything in whack.
How many years have you worked with this? Did you work with this organization?
14 years.
And in those 14 years, what different positions did you have of teaching or administration or whatever?
I actually taught from elementary, I taught second grade, and then I taught fourth grade all the way up to AP classes in high school. And then I was an administrator as well.
Do you sign a contract for 1 year at a time, or how does that work?
Correct, 1 year at a time.
Any difficulty getting out if it just is not a good fit, or?
Oh, no. No, it's, yeah. And we do, sometimes we have to let certain people go, too, if they're not fulfilling our expectations.
What was your favorite position teaching? What country? Is there a favorite or not really?
I actually enjoyed it. I mean, there was one country I didn't appreciate because we were clear out in the desert pretty much. My wife, one day she had 30 camels show up to her window. So it was pretty bad. And we had wild dogs. And yeah, that country I wasn't really so gung-ho about. But other
Kazakhstan?
Places. Yeah, it was Kazakhstan. It was like the Wild Wild West. It's just that they had oil there. So it changed money-wise.
How far away did the kids board at that school or what?
No, kids didn't board at the school, no. But the staff lived on campus. It was a huge, huge place with, once again, metal gates and metal fences around the school. So when the camels came up, they were probably 30 yards away from the actual school building. Yeah.
What was your position at that school?
I was both the principal and assistant principal. For 1 year, assistant principal, the next year, principal.
It sounds like my kind of place, actually.
Yeah, if you like flatness, we could walk to the airport.
What? How did you deal with meals there, food and supplies, and no problem?
No, because we had a lot of oil people, lots of oil people. It had one of the biggest well complex is now in the world. It's not too far away from us, so everything's flown in, and for the most part, and so it becomes a little more pricey. Mm-hmm.
Did they? Was it a lot of Americans working the oil fields, or just a few, and then they were hiring nationals, or what was the situation there?
No, everything has a contract, so when you go into when they went in to drill, they had to hire so many locals. So there was one huge conglomeration of oil people, Schlumberger, Shell, and Chevron was there. And so they have to hire so many people. I remember one time I went to a Chevron and they probably had 8-story building and literally hundreds and hundreds of people working there. And I don't really think they did a whole lot, but it's just part of it.
Probably all that oil was going into China, or not necessarily.
No,
Okay.
I don't know. It went different places, but I can't tell you where.
Yeah. So I just heard about the place that was kind of the armpit of the world for you. The rest were, by comparison, were all great, it sounds like.
Yeah, no, we enjoyed it. And here's the interesting thing about on the school we were at in Kazakhstan, it was the most expensive school to send your kid to. And that's because all of them that were being sent to that school, and there were people from all over the world working for these different oil conglomerations, the company paid, so it was very expensive. Yeah. But my wife and I, we worked in other countries and we enjoyed it. Yeah.
Were there any places where there was a real language barrier for you just living in that spot, or was it always not a problem?
Well, you always have. If you look for people 25 years in that range, you'll usually find people that'll speak English. But Vietnam, at times we had problems communicating. And of course, Kazakhstan. That was, yeah. There was a lot, there was probably 50 to 60,000 people that lived in the city, but it's literally out in the middle of nowhere. And yeah, nobody really spoke it per se. Unless you work at the oil company, then you would speak it for the most part.
In Vietnam, what city were you in, or
We were
where?
in Hanoi.
Hanoi. My experience in the Orient was shoulder to shoulder, dense population, almost impossible to walk down a street. Is that how Hanoi was?
Oh yeah, and the motorcycles was crazy. The thing
Oh,
is,
yeah.
you didn't stop. You just kept walking. It was like random chaos with order. It was quite interesting. If you stopped, you'd probably get run over. So you just walk through across the street, and for some reason, they usually don't hit you.
We never adapted this project or this way of traveling when I was in the Navy, but we would see the locals, men and women, holding each other's hands, men holding men's hands, just so they wouldn't get lost from each other in the crowd of people walking down the street. Of course, we were so much taller that we had the advantage of, oh, there you are. Whereas all the locals were just, 4 foot plus. So that took care of that problem for us. Did you ever feel like you were in a dangerous situation?
No, not really. Not really. When I lived in Africa, but I wasn't working for the organization, that was dangerous. But overall, no.
Was meal preparation in your home ever a big hassle, or was that pretty easy to?
We had the convenience of the Western world. It's just you had to adapt to their foods, and they had the locals ate their local food, but if you wanted something more Western, that's when you'd have to go to stores, and sometimes they may have it and sometimes they may not.
Were there any temperature extremes where you're living that became an issue for you?
I just got used to, Hanoi, Vietnam was the most drastic for me. Yeah, but I don't find Missouri too good either. It's got radical weather.
My guess is in Hanoi, we don't even know what humidity is here compared to Hanoi. Is that the
No,
case?
I'd agree. I would agree. I'd literally walk out and I'd just start drenching. And when we lived in Kazakhstan, the wind was usually always about 10, 15, 20 miles an hour, and it would get very, 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 very cold.
In Hanoi, who were the students there? American business families, kids, or
They were,
Vietnamese, or?
yeah, we didn't service the embassy there because the embassy and went to another school, but they were primarily business people or local Vietnamese.
Can you put your finger on differences between the kids that you had in your schools compared to the average Missouri rural school's kids?
Well, even in within the organization, when we were in Kazakhstan, all of the kids, all of them, their parents were oil people, so engineers, administration, and they or highly academic. When we've been in other schools in other countries with the organization, a lot of the rich kids, and once again, because it's so expensive, the school, you have only the ultra rich who send their kids there unless they can get a scholarship, and yet they still too are wealthy. They have their own drivers, their own nannies, their own cooks, some of them, and they were born with the same, with a golden spoon in their mouth, and they thought they were privileged, and so they many times came to a rude awakening, and we expected that they too had to discipline themselves to study. So it really depended on the culture and where we were at.
Did you find that difficult relating to kids like that, or did you, they're fine?
No, we just treated them the way everybody else, but it was frustrating, of course. And then also we had kids from when we were at some schools where there were embassy kids, a lot of embassy kids. They were your normal middle-class people, and some of them were very enthusiastic, and some of them were not so enthusiastic. And they were simply, they lived much better there because they were living overseas, so they had their own house, their own maid, their own babysitters. So they, a lot of them thought they were special.
Did you have, it seems like over here the curriculum is pretty rigid as to what's supposed to be taught in what grade and when and how. Was it kind of similar there, or did you feel like maybe there was more freedom in teaching and curriculum over there?
No, it was an American curriculum. Okay. We used American textbooks, and we had a lot of kids, and that was probably the difference there and here. A high percentage of all of our kids are doing AP from 10th grade, and then by the time they got to 11th, 12th grade, sometimes that's all they were almost taking were AP courses. But it's all, once again, an American curriculum.
What about parent-teacher relationships? Was there much of that, and how did that go? Was that ever a problem or an issue?
Oh, it's required 3 times a year, or twice minimum, twice maximum, 3 to 4 times. Yeah, parents are parents, and once again, it depended where we were at, the students, because we had people that were highly interested in their kids learning, and then we had some parents, they were quite wealthy, and they thought what they want. I remember one time I asked high school kids in a class, I said, how many of you will live off of the connections of your parents? And there were kids that knew that that's how they would make their lifestyle, was off the connections of the parents, because their parents were very, very wealthy.
What about extracurricular activities for these kids in these schools? Similar to the U.S. here, or very
different? Similar to the U.S. The only thing we would do is we'd have to fly to other countries to compete. But we had probably more academic competitions than what you would here in America. But we had the same, we didn't do American football, but we did soccer, track, basketball. Those were the sports, and a lot of the others were all academics. Model UN, United Nations, debate classes, knowledge pool.
Was there any differences that we haven't discussed already between those school systems and our Missouri rural schools?
I really don't think so.
Did you have to worry about health issues personally, or was there plenty of medical care over there for you and your wife?
Yeah, I mean, the international scene is well established. And even there were sometimes 2 medical clinics that would compete for the expats within the city. And I remember, and I found this humorous, when we were in Kazakhstan, we had 2 different clinics come to give their benefits, etc. And one of the main things that the clinic that we went to bragged about is that they had rabies shots in case you got bit by a dog. Because there were a lot of wild dogs there. And I'm going, well, that's nice. So now you could get wherever you went.
Finally, what ways did this experience of 14 years teaching internationally make you a different person?
We had lived 20 years already overseas, so we were already adjusted to different cultures. I mean, right off the top of my head, I can't think of anything that made me different.
Well, you seem like the same Mike Teeter to me. And that's a good thing. Hey, thanks a lot for letting me just get to talking. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.